This is CliffCentral.com.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. Here we are. We're live. It is the 23rd, of April.
Yep.
Yesterday we were saying it's the 1st of April.
Just let that sink in for a while.
Yeah, I know.
Now look who the April Fool is.
Well, I'll tell you what, these four-day weeks, and we're in the second one now, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've got two more four-day weeks. Next week's the Wednesday is a holiday, and the week after that, the Wednesday is a holiday. That's voting day.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how many people are even at work this week, even for these 4 days. Because, you know, you take the 4 days, you basically get bonus.
Yeah.
Bonus.
And I think with schools on holiday as well, people are taking a long time off.
For sure. I mean, I know that the Easter weekend is also just all kinds of hell on the roads.
Mm-hmm.
Oof.
And actually, there was a story in the news this morning about the Tugela toll plaza being closed. That is, it's opened up. So if you are hitting the road early this morning.
Yeah, there were multiple accidents there.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
My brother and sister-in-law and the kids are going down somewhere to the coast. But it looks like it's been raining there nonstop as well.
Yep.
So.
Especially in KZN.
Yeah. Most of KZN is just underwater at the moment.
It's basically the sea. Yeah. You get to Harrismith and you're at the beach.
I stupidly left a window of my car slightly open last night. No, it wasn't. It wasn't like flooded, but the seat was kind of wet. And
oh no!
Yeah, so I have to sort that out today, otherwise it's not good.
Oh, you'll have that smell that you just can't ever really shake. That was fine. How's your weekend though?
All right, I'll give you a quick rundown because it's only interesting if you were there. No, I mean, Thursday night I went out with some friends. It was like a birthday party type thing. I saw Lady Leah and like a whole lot of other people there.
Ah.
That was fun.
Nice, I see.
Yeah, it was very cool. In Pretoria. Then on Friday, I went through to a gin and tennis party, which a friend of mine had organized. She lives out near Mulderstrip.
Fun.
Yeah, it was really good fun. I mean, I don't play tennis and I don't drink gin, but I still went. And it turned into like a big Easter party, which was really great. And yeah, I was with a cool crew of people there and that went on. Saturday had a family friends lunch at my parents' place, which was very cool. And Saturday night, I had some people around. And then on Sunday, another lunch. So much of eating.
Mm-hmm.
I spent the whole day. Sunday, I was just useless. I was exhausted and lazy. So I did nothing productive. I watched tons of series.
Yeah.
I watched that show that people were telling us about, that One Strange Rock that Will Smith is kind of the host of. Brilliant, by the way. Thank you for that tip. It's a good show.
Mm.
It's just so, it's like about how on the knife's edge life is. If you are the kind of person who gets anxiety or you're nervous, you shouldn't maybe watch this thing because
I'll give it a skip.
It reminds you of how like unbelievably fragile the idea of life is, that if there was 2% more oxygen in the atmosphere, we'd all burn. And if there was 1% less oxygen in the air, we wouldn't be able to breathe properly. And it goes into like how these collisions with asteroids and, you know, the moon, how the moon was made and all of these things in the billions of years of history of the Earth have conspired to make the world that we can live in, that life could have occurred in. And I've only got up to episode 4. The first one is about the air, basically, and the atmosphere. And it's with these astronomers. So these guys who've been to the moon.
Mm-hmm.
Not astronomers, astronauts.
Oh, yeah.
They've been to the moon. And they've seen the Earth from the moon, so they have a perspective that the rest of us don't have. And the second episode, I think, was about the existence of water and just how important that is, and the collisions and the accidents of ancient history that could have brought about the Earth as it is now, the 24-hour day, the seasons, all of that stuff, that we must have collided with our twin planet billions of years ago, a planet called Theia. And that if Earth and Theia hadn't collided, we would have been a very different world to the world that we are. Then the third episode's about the sun, and I can't remember all the others, but I've only got up to number 4. Because it's quite, like, you have to really concentrate.
Quite heavy, yeah.
There's a lot of information in there. And life is just so incredibly precious. And unless you see a show like that, you kind of think about the problems of being a human being. and you think, oh, these are insurmountable. I'll tell you what, after watching that, I don't care about peace in the Middle East or how much money is in the bank or whether or not I've got a cold, which I do have this morning, because just to be alive, even for 15 minutes, is miraculous and unexpected. And I woke up this morning, I was like, wow, holy fuck, am I lucky to be alive.
And some people do it for over 100 years.
I know, and you look at this, you look at the history of this planet, and you see how incredibly difficult it must have been to exist even, you know, a couple of million years ago when there were monstrous giant dinosaurs running around eating us.
I've heard of that species. I mean,
look, there's a cream for that.
We weren't around at the same time, but these fish that jumped out of the water and suddenly started to move around on the land. And you think about volcanoes, and you think about the thin crust of the earth that floats on the top of a liquid mantle. And you think about gravity, and you think about the sun, which could just destroy us in one. If one massive solar flare took place now, it would knock out all human electronic communication. Gone. This business would not exist. You'd not be able to be listening to us right now. You wouldn't be able to check your Facebook or your Instagram.
It makes me feel so important.
I'm telling you. And we think, like, life is, we think that it's about how well you live, about how successful you are. How full of ourselves are
how
we?
How fickle, yeah.
It's just ridiculous. I loved that show.
Is it a Netflix thing?
It's on Netflix, yeah. It's called One Strange Rock.
Oh, goodness.
It's amazing. They've got these 8 astronauts, and they all just talk about what their experience is looking at the Earth, because that's the loneliest job in the world, right? I mean, even if you are up there with some friends, you're far away from the rest of humanity.
Yeah, it takes special people to do that.
If you're on a spacewalk, the guy was talking about how he I don't want to ruin it for you, but how he got a tear in his eye while he was in a spacesuit, and he had to vent the oxygen out. And he felt at that moment like he was so vulnerable, because if something had gone wrong there and he'd become untethered from the spacecraft, it's the end. You float into the universe, and ultimately you just freeze and die.
Would that be a slow or quick death? It would be quick, right?
No,
because as soon as you
You'd run out of breath. So yeah, it wouldn't take forever, but it would be a horrible way to go, because you'd just asphyxiate.
What's that movie with George Clooney and Sandra Bullock?
Gravity.
Yes.
Horrible.
When one of them got ejected.
Oh, it's horrible. Anyway, so just think about all of that stuff if you are feeling, and cosmic rays, solar energy that is bombarding this planet every day, and I'm not just talking about ultraviolet radiation. There's actual cosmic X-rays that pummel the Earth every day. If we didn't have an ozone layer, if we didn't have the tiny thin atmosphere that we have, it would be gone. We would be finished. You'd bake to death in the sun.
Mm. We'd be.
What a way to go.
Burnt cookies, us.
Outside of the space station, the ISS, the International Space Station, if you are directly in the line of the sun, the temperature outside your spacesuit goes up to 250 degrees Celsius. That's more than double the boiling point of water.
Okay.
And if you're on the cold side, okay, where the sun can't get to you, if you're in the shade, so to speak, it's minus 250 degrees Celsius outside of your spacesuit. Those are extremes of temperature. And again, even on Earth, there are places that people can't live because it's too hot or too cold.
Yeah.
Most of the Earth, no one lives in Antarctica all year round. No one's built a permanent house and claimed land in Antarctica to live. You can't live there. It's awful.
Think of major parts of deserts as well.
Yeah, exactly. The Sahara, the Gobi. And there are people who pass through it, but they don't live in the middle of it.
Just think of the outback.
Exactly. And you think about, that's the stuff on Earth that's uninhabitable. Every single scrap of the universe beyond Earth, with the exception of possibly a few planets or moons that we've discovered and many more that we haven't, is uninhabitable. It's just, it's absolutely incredible that you're alive today. That is the miracle. If you're ever feeling like you don't matter, even if there have been 10 billion people before this, and there are now 7 or 8 billion people around at the moment, those 18 billion altogether, let's say it's 20 billion for the sake of people we didn't know about who died long ago.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say 20 billion people who've ever existed. That is extraordinary that you're one of them. Because just think about how a different sperm from your daddy
would could have changed the game.
Means you're out of the picture. The fact that you have made it to be one of the 20 billion people who have lived on planet Earth, even if you lived badly, even if you had a shit life, even if things were hard, even if you had no money, even if you were killed in battle, the fact that you lived is just so unbelievably small. It's like winning the lotto 5 million times in a row.
Just surviving the whole gestation period and
everything.
Childbirth.
It is just impossible that you even lived.
And surviving high school.
Yeah,
yeah, that's right. That's a lot. That takes a toll on the person.
It's a different kind of survival, but sure. I just found it very moving. The whole thing. Yeah. Terrific. So if you're looking for something to just give you perspective on everything that's going on around us.
Yeah, that just craps on all of the horrible trash I was binging over the weekend I've watched.
Well, what did you watch?
Anything and everything.
Did you watch crap?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But that
I
was good.
I even ran out of stuff to watch.
But the weather was allowing it.
That's the thing. That was the big excuse.
Well, only the weather only got crappy yesterday. So.
Oh, no, it was just nice and gray. I didn't feel like going out much. But I did naturally watch Beyonce's new documentary at least 3 times.
No, you didn't. Yeah, not 3 times.
3 times, yeah.
Then you were a little more than slightly obsessed.
I had to watch it once on my own to fully take it all in. And then we had a games night at my sister's place. Then it was on in the background there. And then yesterday morning, just to also motivate myself, I watched it again. But not to sound like a basic and expected Beyonce fan on this one. It really shows a different side to Beyonce. And I think it's eye-opening in that way.
You know, one day someone will explain to me why Beyonce is a star. Because I really don't understand it. I don't think she's that attractive. I think she's quite thick set.
Mm-hmm.
For me, that's not my look for a woman. I don't love her body.
As an entertainer.
She's got a pretty face. She can certainly dance. I'll give her those two things. She's not a great singer by any stretch of the imagination.
As an entertainer, full on.
She's about as good a singer as Madonna.
Ah.
Yes. And that is the truth.
Hey, Madonna's at the back of the bus.
Madonna's made more money than Beyonce.
Yes, but at the back of the bus with that vocal abilities.
That's what I'm saying. Neither of them are that great as singers. No, I mean, you can defend her in a minute.
Yeah.
I don't think she's a great singer by any stretch of the imagination. I think the fact that she is a strong, independent black woman is probably part of the reason that so many people like her, because most of her fan base is strong, independent black women.
Thanks, Gareth.
And Sia. That gives her, like a base. You know, like if you're a politician and you're running for office, you need to have a base to start. You need your core supporters. And I think that's where Beyonce has a lot of supporters, because she's a big women's advocate. She's a big women of color advocate. She's very much, all of her songs are kind of about how you don't need men and, you know, all that kind of crap. Which I think is political. I think she's done that on purpose, because she realizes if she plays to that crowd, they will think that she's more than she is. And they do. I get that she's married to Jay-Z. That adds to her fame.
We don't like that.
People don't like that?
No.
I think
Jay-Z's not worth
it. I think they're stronger together than they are apart.
Hey, but the cheating, and he's ugly, and
you're well.
Yeah, if anyone's ugly.
Okay. Yeah. All right, okay. But I still don't get it, because I can name on my own standards here, I can name 20, 30 beautiful black women in history who have been artists, who have been entertainers, who are better than her in every way.
Would you say Rihanna's better?
I'd say Rihanna's better. I'd say Diana Ross and Tina Turner are better. Ooh. I'd say, there are thousands, not even hundreds.
Whitney
thousands.
Houston.
Oh, Whitney for sure.
I know it doesn't sound like I'm being objective.
Yeah, go on.
With all of this.
All right.
But that's why specifically I use the word entertainer, because the likes of Rihanna, you might say that she's great vocally, but have you ever seen Rihanna perform live? She looks like she just rolled out of bed and she's like, okay, no. I'm here. And she's singing.
So you're talking about like on a stage show.
Everything, okay. You know.
But remember, most of the fans of Beyonce have never seen her stage show.
Right.
So that, I don't know if that counts. Why are they fans?
Well, even just in video.
Okay, well, maybe they've seen her in video, but I've seen a lot of video of some pretty impressive people over time. It's not enough. I don't think with her level, I don't know. Maybe I just don't understand.
Right.
Someone needs to explain this to me.
I find it fascinating. This documentary took a look at her life straight after giving birth to the twins.
Oh, yeah.
And she had health problems there. She gave birth to the twins. And it's now a bit of a countdown clock to her Coachella performance in 2018. So it's now.
Apparently was the best thing. I heard from people who were there. I heard from people who saw it that she was absolutely outstanding.
You see, I'm not putting my views there just so that I sound subjective. I'm not going to say, sure, your sources.
Is that not what you think?
I definitely believe that.
Oh, okay.
But you see, I sound too subjective. Right. And she, you know, she's lost her father as her manager. So you see her managing herself. You see her directing the show herself. She had three sound stages. She had a sound stage for dancers. She had a sound stage for a band. She had sound stage for a technical team. And she was going through all of them, putting this 2-hour show together. And then you also see her going through her health struggles. You know, she had to have an emergency C-section after the babies as she was trying to get back to the shape. So she wasn't having zero alcohol, zero carbs, zero meat,
okay,
zero dairy,
hero.
Zero
she's a
sugar.
Hero.
Yes.
No, okay.
And with her health,
like
issues,
every woman
still
on
trying
earth
to
has ever had a child. Yeah. All right. Go on.
Get back to this weight. And when you finally see, you know, I just think there's a little part of every single human who wants to be their best. I think wherever we are in life, we want to be our best. We want to be as great as we can in whatever field we are in. And to see this at the end of the day, a woman, you know, just a human being who has these dreams, and she says, you know what, I am going to do this. And despite these little hurdles in her way, she makes it happen.
Look, she's man, motivational. She
you
really
watch
is.
Those 2 hours of a performance with every fan angled in a way that blows her hair in a certain way, every dance move that she nails,
it's incredible. Yeah, but she's totally building up this God complex for her fans of her.
Right.
I mean, you know, a fan blowing her hair in a certain way. This is pure narcissism and showmanship. It is. It's just me,
it,
me,
it
me, me.
It is great. It is.
This
she's
is the same reason.
Entertainer.
She's like the Donald Trump of entertainment. That's what it is. Donald Trump is the Beyonce of politics, which is part of the reason I don't like him. And she is the Donald Trump of entertainment. She really is. It's me, me, me. Mm. I think every move that she's made is extremely calculated, including her marriage and having children and talking about her weight problems. It's all calculated. It's all calculated to fill that fan base up with the feelings she knows she can create for them. And then she becomes their icon. She becomes the idea of what they wish they were, if they hadn't become like fat housewives.
Oh.
I'm telling you. But that's just me. So
okay,
I'll agree to disagree. And honestly, from having heard millions of singers in my life and having been a fan of so many really amazing female vocalists, Beyonce doesn't even make it into the top 500 of female singers of all time. She really does not. And I can guarantee you, I'm not the only one who feels that way who's a music fan. Beyonce fans are not music fans; they're Beyonce fans.
Yeah. They're fans of the whole package.
Those songs are absolute shit. They're repetitive shit.
Let me... Debatable.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fine. No, we'll agree to disagree. We don't have to see eye to eye on everything, Sia.
But I just say, you know, those 2 hours and 17 minutes changed my weekend.
All right. There's lots of stuff going on that we've got to get to. Somebody says here, I just watched Afterlife. In one sitting, great show. Ricky Gervais has outdone himself. The irony of his character the irony of it all, his character would have called himself a C-U-N-T if he saw him from the outside.
Mm.
Nevertheless, great show about life and perspective and how looking around outside of your own circumstances and doing good for others could be a key to happiness. Well, you have to watch right till the last episode to get that.
Oh, I got into the first episode over the weekend as well.
Depressed you?
Yeah, it was.
You didn't want to watch anymore. I knew it.
From like, I think it was the first couple of minutes when I see, this isn't ruining anything for anyone who still wants to watch it, when I see the Rick Gervais character like just eat vegetable curry from a can. I thought, no thanks. No, don't want.
No, it's pretty sad.
Need something that lifts me up, not this.
Really sounds like the way forward, I must say. I'm a few glasses of vino in, though. That's from Ryan.
Very good.
And then I've got to tell you, the Naked Economy is back.
Oh, that's good. Guys.
It's good and nice, Leanne.
It's guys.
The Naked Economy is back with another inspirational episode. This time, Ernie presents Shane with a unique venture that is changing the life of children and parents alike. Art class takes on a new meaning when it's designed to equip kids for thinking outside the box and for being relevant in the future. It sounds intriguing. It should be, because the Naked Economy so far has been nothing but intriguing. Find out now on the Naked Economy, which is brought to you by Naked Insurance. And of course, you can get that on cliffcentral.com or wherever you get your podcasts. I showed someone how to use our app on, when was it? Saturday.
Yes.
It's really easy. And by the way, we've got a video going. It's all over on social media at the moment, about how you can download podcasts. There's still some people who they're afraid of listening because they don't want to use up data.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in a Wi-Fi zone or whatever and use the download feature, which we explain in the video, save yourself a huge amount of data.
Mm-hmm.
How was your weekend?
Oh, it was good. Also, family lunches and dinners.
And so
Easter eggs.
God, I ate and ate and ate.
Oh. Yeah. And then it was a split decision. What's it? A split when it's a quick decision?
Oh, spur of the moment.
No.
Split decision.
Split decision.
Why are you doubting yourself?
To go to Bella Bella just for an hour. So it was 2 hours there, an hour in Bella Bella, an hour back.
For such a short time.
So it all starts with my friend who lives along a river in Joburg. And there are guinea fowl along this river.
Right.
And you know they are all in their little flocks. They mostly run around on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And the neighbor's cat kind of split this flock. And two tiny little guinea fowl got trapped in my friend's unit. And as soon as the parents left and the rest of the flock, they didn't know what to do with themselves because they have to follow someone. So they started following my friend, and the flock was gone.
Aww.
So she happens to be the daughter of, you remember the books Newman's Birds?
Yes, Paul Newman.
She's Pam Newman, and she's living with her brother, who's also obviously a Newman. And
well,
so
those
two
guinea fowl lucked out.
Yeah, exactly.
I find it interesting that birds even follow humans in this way. I didn't know
that. Well, guinea fowl are so dumb, they'll follow anything.
Paul Newman is a guy who wrote a beautiful set of books called Newman's Birds, which have become like a, it's almost like a staple of anyone who's a bird watcher. And he had these incredible hand-painted paintings of all the different birds, and he did all the research, a real ornithologist.
Mm. Well, anyway, these two little birds spent the night. One didn't make it through the night. Oh. They were about a week old. They were really tiny. One did and became very attached to Pam.
Yeah.
We got pictures sent to us all the time of Florence, who is now growing up.
Oh, you named Florence.
And she was very cute and fluffy, and she's kind of going through her awkward teenage phase now. But as much as you walk her along a river and walk past another flock, she won't leave Pam.
Uh-oh.
So Pam has had to be mommy bird and learn how to feed her worms and take her hunting and foraging. So,
but to what extent do they follow her, like, inside the house as well?
Yep. She takes it on holidays in the car.
God, no, that's incredible.
It can't survive without her.
And how do you, my goodness, how do you even start to teach a bird how to?
You can't. So
look for
this is where
food.
The plan came in.
Okay.
So the plan came in, with Pam looking online to see, if there were other guinea fowl her age that we could perhaps pair her with. So that they would grow up and then leave together. So she found two guinea fowl chicks online that were in Bella Bella. So off we went to Bella Bella to collect the two of them. They're just a month older than Flo. And put them in a box in the back. It smelled of farm the whole way home. The roads, by the way, were absolutely perfect and well policed.
But that's the N1 to Polokwane, so that's a hell of a road to take at Easter time.
Yeah.
You guys, your timing is fantastic.
Well, if you go on a Saturday, just for a tip, on a Saturday morning and come back in the Saturday afternoon, it's really quiet. Everyone's doing, they're traveling late at night or in the early hours of morning. So it was good.
Okay.
Anyway, so we got back with the two birds and she's now got to keep them apart for a week until she can put them all into one enclosure. And then the way it works is you let one out because he'll always come back at a time. And then the next one, he'll always come back, and the third. And then you let them all out until they all go. So it's quite a rigmarole. I mean, just for saving a little bird that ended up in your apartment.
Yeah, that's now following you.
They've had to build enclosures and apologize to the neighbors because they're really loud birds. So, but yeah, really, they're beautiful. Wow. And let's hope that this experiment works.
On the next episode of Animal Rescue with Leanne Mole, who will she be returning to the wild?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, so the farm we got them off of, the guy has 120 chickens. And you can see he's lived on a farm all his life. He just grabs them by their legs and they kind of fall dead.
There's nothing in, you know.
Are you afraid of chickens?
In the animal kingdom, give me a lion because you know what they want. You know, they just keep them at bay, throw some meat at them, they're good. Give me a cheetah because stay out of the way. They'll run as fast as hell. Birds? Oh,
get frightened of birds.
Those beaks, like the squawks, that when they flap and their feathers all over the place.
The scaly feet.
Well, we've often had pigeons or doves that come into this office and Sia just disappears.
Miss me.
All right. Couple of stories in the news. It's just after 1:30. What do you want to start with? Some election news?
Well, there was Sri Lanka. I mean, that was the biggest
of
the weekend.
Right. I'd almost forgotten about that, to be perfectly honest.
I thought it was quite shocking. The death toll is now 310.
Oh my God.
And I never do the thing where you look at the videos or on social media or you watch certain things, or you look at the pictures.
Especially the gory.
Yeah. No. And this time I actually wanted to see what the church looked like because someone mentioned on Twitter that it was actually quite a beautiful church, the first church that was hit. So I went onto the Facebook page of the first church. And already they had quite gory images of people who had died.
Oh, no.
And the pews that had been uplifted and the roof that had completely disappeared. But, it was pretty hectic. So all in all, I think it was three churches and three hotels.
I've got to ask why it is that when Christians are massacred like this, people don't say Christian. Like both Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton referred to them as Easter worshippers. As opposed to just saying Christian. I don't know why they have to use the euphemism.
Hmm.
They both said, you know, we're sending our sympathies, we're thinking about, praying about. But they don't say, like they both said Muslims when it was the New Zealand thing. Why are they so obfuscatory about Christian? What's wrong with that word? Why is it embarrassing for certain people to talk about Christians being persecuted? Hmm. We know in parts of the Islamic world, it is very, very difficult to be a Christian. We know that the Coptic Church in Egypt is under constant threat from the Islamists. Why is this a problem to talk about?
So, I never noticed that before.
Yeah, it's just something to be aware of. And it irritates me when people try to hide or to euphemize the word Christian. I mean, I'm not a Christian. I don't go out to bat for them. But I'm just sick to death of the fact that there are different standards for different religions, that there's a hierarchy of victimhood even among religions, and that Christianity is the bottom of that. So when something terrible happens to Christians, it doesn't get the kind of coverage that maybe happens to Muslims and maybe to Jews and maybe to Hindus. There's something strange going on there, and it just makes me a little bit suspicious. So apparently the latest from the New York Times is that Sri Lankan officials said on Monday the coordinated bombings of churches and hotels across the country on Easter Sunday had been carried out by National Tawhid Jamaat, a little-known radical Islamist group with help from international militants. That's the latest we have on who could have done this.
They would have had help because it was so coordinated.
Yeah, it makes it scary. And then to go home for a little bit for the elections, there are many good reasons not to vote EFF, but the party and its leaders seem to be on the on track to get more votes than they did in the last election. They, of course, are very noticeable. They will hopefully achieve their magical 10% mark, according to them, in the election. That will take the party's representation in parliament up to 40 MPs. That would be quite something, right? I mean, if they can do that. So Adrian Basson, in a News 24 article, says that his philosophy here is why more people will vote for the EFF, and it all has to do with Julius and his ability to feel and gauge the temperature. If you feel like reading that. And then while we're talking about political parties, of course, they're all on the campaign trail at the moment, trying to get votes wherever they can. And Cyril and a lot of the others are ready to go anywhere, including going to churches. Take me to church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just on that little road trip that I did, I've never seen so many election posters.
Yeah, apparently Limpopo is the most contested area.
Hugely.
The EFF are desperately trying to get a foothold in Limpopo. It's the likeliest of all the provinces to fall to them. And obviously then things are a bit tense in terms of campaigning up there.
The streets were just lined with red Son of the Soil posters.
Huh. Well, political parties used the Easter weekend to continue campaigning. With just a few weeks to go, the ANC, DA and COPE have tried to convince voters they are right. And they've done this by going to churches. Cyril went to the Methodist Church in KZN and praised the role that the Methodist Church had played in the formation of the ANC more than a century ago. The president was accompanied by Sithle Zikalala, who's the ANC KZN chairperson. In Port Shepstone, Ramaphosa urged congregants of the Methodist Church to keep the ANC and the government in their prayers. I find these guys just so distasteful. Musi Maimane went to HIV activist Lucky Mazibuko, who'd been living with the virus for almost 30 years. COPE said that it's confident it'll have the support of churches leading up to the elections. And the others all did the same thing, really. Only a few parties that don't try to do this. Good for them. Okay, then we've got the Tugela Plaza story. This probably affects a lot of people who are taking to the roads this morning. Major routes, including the N1 and N3, are experiencing high traffic volumes Monday and Tuesday as people make their way back home or to a holiday for the Easter long weekend. And the upcoming weekend, the N3 toll concession says some lanes have been opened on the N3 toll route at Tugela Toll Plaza as three accident scenes have been cleared. Of course, the rain doesn't help. So that's the latest on those.
There's also, it seems to happen every few months where there are super high winds just outside the Huguenot Tunnel in the Western Cape.
Oh, right.
Where trucks are actually blown over. And because it's only a few lanes, the road is closed and there's sort of only one way in and one way out.
Oy, oy.
But that's quite hectic. It's just crazy on the roads at the moment.
And then apparently they're doing a Prince memoir.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. A book would contain previously unseen photos, scrapbooks and lyric sheets, as well as the memoir Prince had started to write himself. It's called The Beautiful Ones. It will be released in October, and that's from the publishing house Penguin Random House. They've said that they're going to put it together 3 years after the singer's sudden death in April 2016. The kid from Minneapolis, as they called him, who died of an accidental fentanyl overdose, aged 57, had announced a month before his death that he would tell his own story in his own words in a book originally set for release in 2017. The work is not just a tribute to Prince, but an original and energizing literary work full of his ideas and vision, his voice and his image, his undying gift to the world. So that could be exciting, especially if you're a Prince fan.
Yeah.
The Queen turned 93 over the weekend.
Still going strong.
93. Let me tell you, I looked at a picture of her. That woman looks incredible for 93, and she went to some church service on Sunday.
Yeah, their Easter celebration.
Unbelievable. I mean, she was there. She was full of the same energy. Philip doesn't bother to come to these things anymore. I think he's 97.
He has a right to, yeah, to decide.
No, he's pulled out of all that stuff. But the Queen is still out there. She's still looking good. And then finally, you know that picture that you may have seen on social media with two of the rangers?
Yes.
In a gorilla reserve. And these two gorillas with an enormous amount of attitude in the picture. So it's the two gorillas that they're at the Virunga National Park in the DRC. And it's a home to a third of the world's population of endangered mountain gorillas. Matthew Shamavu, who is one of 600 rangers at the park, shared the image on social media with a caption, "Another day at the office," while a colleague posted a close-up with one particularly friendly primate. And apparently these four, the two gorillas and the two guys in the picture, it wasn't as if they had to take 100 pictures to get it. It's all totally real, looking cool for the camera.
Yeah, so it's the ranger in front, and you can see he's the one holding the camera because his arm's a bit outstretched.
Right.
And then behind him, probably 2 meters away, are two gorillas standing on their back legs, standing upright.
Yeah.
The one seems to be leaning forward a bit, but they're both looking right at the camera as if they know that they're posing for a selfie.
Amazing.
And then between them, about 10 meters down, is the third ranger. It's such a cool photograph.
Oh, because we didn't get to speak to Anthea yesterday, we're going to speak to her today in the money shots. So you ready to go for that quickly?
Yes.
All right, let's check in with Anthea. I'm not going to play her music because she's on Skype. She's not here to enjoy it herself. Hey, Anthea, how are you doing?
Good morning, Gareth. I'm well, thanks. How are you?
Good. Where in the country are you?
I'm in Cape Town.
Oh. So
a little bit of Easter weekend.
Nice. So are you down there just for fun, or are you there for work as well?
For both, and I did the Two Oceans Half Marathon on Saturday.
I saw the pictures. Congratulations.
Thank you. It was really fun, actually. Surprised.
How did you do?
I did okay. I'm getting old and slow, it feels like, but I finished in decent time, so I'm fine.
All right, just a few things I wanted to catch up with you on today. There are lots of talks around Maria Ramos, and she's heading up the Eskom unbundling project. Now, what do you think of that?
Yes, I saw that, and I saw all the comments on Twitter about it, and she doesn't seem to be, like, everything on Twitter seems to be negative, but I think she's the perfect person for it, actually. You know, she used to be Director General of National Treasury.
Right.
She ran Transnet, and I think the criticisms come from, I'm not sure, actually, because a lot of people are saying, well, she sold off Transnet's assets for too cheaply. But I think we all know that assets are only worth what someone will pay for it. That's the first thing. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong when a company is in dire straits or it needs cash flow. There's nothing wrong with selling off non-core assets, which basically she did. She sold off their stake in SAA. And by the way, doesn't that look good now? She sold off their stake in MTN. Mm-hmm. And then the one that everyone's worried about is that she sold off their 26% stake in the Victoria and Alfred Waterfront, which is the property development company, the V&A in Cape Town.
Right.
Which obviously, well, I can't say obviously, but they say she sold it off for too cheaply, and so she should have held out for more money. But
so
actually,
do you think this is all unfair criticism of her?
I do think so. So, you know, I don't think she's the best, she was the best banking CEO I've ever seen. But I can almost imagine Maria Ramos sitting at her desk, looking over her glasses and kind of contemplating the political and socioeconomic framework that she has for Eskom to work in. Because I think that's what she does well. I don't think she's a Michael Jordan and a Bank Zero innovative, let's go and get out there and do stuff. So at Absa, maybe she was okay, right?
Yeah.
But I do think with the state-owned enterprises, she understands the policy framework she has to work in. So I think it's a great appointment, actually.
Yeah, there's a bit of a bureaucrat in her, but she's also quite effective in the right machinery. So maybe this is the right home for her. Of course, this Eskom unbundling is itself very controversial because the unions are dead against it. There are lots of people in the private sector who think, well, it's a bit suspicious and may involve some dealings with, like, Patrice and And Jeff Radebe is too important and powerful in all of this. And people are saying, well, there might be some nefarious activity going on. I don't know if that's got any impact on Maria Ramos and her appointment. In fact, she's probably one of the more trustworthy people to handle something like this. So it is above board, don't you think?
I think that it absolutely has got something to do with the negativity around Maria's appointment, because South Africans generally, and rightfully so, are just so suspicious of anything that's happening in government at the moment with lots of money and institutions. You know, we've been through a lot of corruption, so sure, we're going to be suspicious. And she is married to Trevor Manuel, and it is like a little inner cabal. You know, Trevor Manuel and Edward Kiesewetter grew up in the same area. Like, it all seems a bit kind of...
They
all had
incestuous.
Dinner together.
It's a bit incestuous. And we know they're all friendly with Tito Mboweni, and he's just made this appointment too, which made him the recipient of some ire as well, right?
Exactly. But, you know, I do see them as very academic and very intellectual. That's the word I'm looking for. They do come, all of them, come across as a kind. And I think maybe South Africa's a little bit anti-intellectual at the moment as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's been a hangover of the Zuma regime, without any doubt.
There you go.
Okay. Can we talk quickly about your friend Elon Musk, who just cannot put his phone down long enough to stop getting his companies into trouble?
Oh, what is wrong with that boy? I mean, I do love him. He's such a little rebel, but he's going to get himself in jail and land himself in some serious trouble. So this time he tweeted again about Tesla making 500,000 cars this year, which is exactly the same tweet he got into trouble for last year. And the SEC warned him, saying, you know, that they're in discussions with his lawyer at the moment, deciding how much of a fine he's going to get and whether he won't be allowed to tweet in future. And I know, like, it almost seems he's just doing it in jest. But actually, the boy needs to grow up now. He's the CEO of a listed multi-billion dollar company. He can't just be going around, giving guidance on listed companies, because that's what he's doing effectively. You know, when a company says, we're going to sell X amount of product, as analysts, we can pretty much figure out what their future earnings are going to be and what the company will be worth. And if he keeps doing that, then, he is definitely overstepping boundaries now. It's actually not funny anymore.
Can you go to jail for this?
Oh, definitely. Oh, absolutely. It's manipulating his share price. It's all sorts of things.
All right. Let's leave him, because otherwise, you know, we're not going to change his opinion. He's definitely into being loud and difficult and dangerous. So I suppose let's ignore him and move to Jack Ma.
Yes, because this is interesting. So he came out a couple of weeks ago, last week actually, saying that he endorses extreme overtime. And he's pretty much referring to the IT sector, where programmers work 12 hours a day kind of stuff. And they call it the 996 schedule, which refers to working from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. 6 days a week. And he's saying he doesn't see any problem with this. In fact, the only way to get ahead in life is to do that. And of course, you can imagine, because he's Chinese and everyone's going, oh no, you want to overwork people. And so I think this is very interesting. He says he's not advocating that everybody has to work to those extremes, but he considers the 996 a huge blessing, he says, which is really funny.
Sia brought this up for us last week, and I can understand why it's controversial, because some people believe that, you know, labor rights are a thing and that we're not in the Industrial Revolution anymore and workers need to be protected and all of this stuff. But honestly, out of all the billionaires in the world, I don't think there's one of them who doesn't put in more than the required amount of time. And that's why they're billionaires. If you want to be truly successful in this world, it means you have to put in more time than is required by your job description. And all Jack Ma is saying is that part of the reason that he's had the success he's had is that he works with people who put in the extra time. That's not controversial.
Exactly.
Is that really such a controversial thing?
No, but they're making it such a controversial thing, because he's such an icon, and he's saying that the only way to achieve success is to put in this extra time.
Well, this is true of the Chinese people. They've been like this since the dawn of time. While we were all fucking around on all fours, they were building the Great Wall of China.
I guess the controversial part is it the only way to be successful in this society?
I don't know
in the system.
I don't know that, but I do think that the Chinese have proven in terms of productivity that their growth over the last 60 to 70 years has been unparalleled. There is no other country that can say it has done so much to combat poverty, that has lifted so many people out of the working classes into the middle classes. I don't think there's any country that cities have grown as fast, any country that produces more goods or as quickly as the Chinese do. And for those reasons alone, Jack Ma shouldn't be an object of hostility to people. He should be someone that they listen to. If you want to know how to be better, listen to Jack Ma.
You see, but aren't you supposed to give everyone an equal chance, and people are supposed to be able to do what they want to?
Sure.
And not have to work 12 hours a day?
Not in a competitive market, Anthea. If someone else is working twice as hard as you, the chances are they'll pick up on something that you didn't, and they'll make the money that you were meant to. So I'm sorry it's not fair, but that's how it works.
Yeah, you're talking to somebody who does work 996.
Exactly, there we go.
Yeah, I think it's very funny, actually,
I've never met anyone who is successful in their own right that has done just the minimum, ever. If you're doing just the minimum, if you clock in at work at exactly the right time every day and you clock out exactly the right time every day, forget about being rich. Forget about being successful. It's not anybody plotting against you. It's not the economy or the environment or your daddy or your mommy or that your boss hates you or anything else. It's that you're lazy. If you do more than that, when it is required especially, you'll be successful.
And isn't it that everyone has their own goals? So not everybody wants to build an Alibaba.
No. You know?
So the ones who want to, let them. And the ones who don't want to, that's fine. Work your 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, and get on with it. And kind of be happy where you are, is the other point, right? And you know, Jack Ma says, if you like what you do, then it won't be a problem. If you don't like it, as he says, every minute is torture. So there you go.
There we go.
Find something you love.
All right. Thank you so much, Anthea.
Pleasure. I'll see you next week then.
Thank you. There's Anthea Gardner with a look at the money shot next week, Monday. She's back to give us a full report as usual. The whole problem with this Jack Ma thing is it's the same people, exactly the same people who believe in egalitarianism. They believe in the equality of outcome. They think that if you just rig the system that everybody can be the same, that we can all do the same, we can all be the same, we can all have the same. It's not possible. Sorry. Jack Ma's proof of that is the richest man in China. The reason he is because he's not afraid to work. Some people all over the world want to do 4 hours of work a day and earn the same as Jack Ma. Let me remind you, it's never going to happen for you. It's time for Said by Sia. Let's see what's going on in a little optimistic news for your short four-day week. And Sia has plenty of that for you today. Hey, Sia.
Get ready to feel better about just human beings in general.
Good.
We often talk about how waiters really have to bear the brunt of a lot of nasty people.
Mm. Leanne Moll, she's...
Thanks.
Did you hear about that Sia Sangweni with these tough orders?
I was just about to say, you are the worst person to be presenting anything about how poor waiters have X, Y, and Z. I've never seen a waiter walk away from Sia with less than 5 minutes of breakdown of what needs to be taken out and what needs to be put into every single dish.
But I've never
taken the trouble to make up on the menu.
I just put myself into this hole, I guess.
You're not rude, but everything with you is complicated.
Well, this customer was definitely rude. This happened actually at a restaurant in East London where this customer was horrible to the waiter and ended up leaving a 4 rand tip. It's actually quite horrible, really.
Mm-hmm.
But shout out to Jared Ruttenberg. He's a South African travel writer. He was in East London at the time when he heard about this. And he thought, like, dude, this is not cool at all. So while he was on this writing assignment, he posted it on his social media about what he had heard and how horrible this is. And he, and along with a couple of other people, 11 in total, all banded up money together and ended up saying in your face to whoever the rude customer was, they put together 4,444 rand.
Oh, wow.
And they gave it to the waiter who suffered. So I think this is so awesome. The waiter's name is Olani Mbalo and wasn't at the restaurant when the writer Jared walked into the restaurant to present this money, but nonetheless left Olani a little tip and part of, left the money and a letter. And part of the letter read, please don't let the bigoted actions of a few make you doubt yourself or doubt that there are good people out there. This tip is from a group of 11 people, none of whom know you or even each other, but want to express their frustration, but also support you. Olani was very surprised by this and he says, sure. I was shocked when I got the money. I saved a little bit of the money for my graduation next month and I'd like to thank them. I truly appreciate it. And Jared, the writer, makes himself sound even better by saying, it would indeed be a chilling chastisement of our times if people had to be honored for doing what is right. I think this is so sweet. He continues to say, doing what is right should be a given. I'm also fully aware that giving money in this instance doesn't really solve the larger issue and may just be dressing a wound. But he says, I've decided to create one small act at a time, and thankfully I'm not alone. That's why we left a 4,444 rands tip.
That's very good.
I mean,
very nice. Listen, nothing wrong with that.
That's so sweet. Beautiful. Shout out to you, Jared Rattenberg, for rallying up 10 other people to donate 4,444 rand.
I'm just surprised that a travel writer can afford to give anyone a tip. That's what surprises me. You know, yeah, look, there's a part of this that just kind of, I'm obviously pissed off as all hell about people who abuse waiters.
Mm.
But I'm also a little bit suspicious of people who ask for attention for themselves after they've done something good for a waiter. Just saying. I'm not necessarily criticizing this guy. He might be a really solid, top class guy who honestly did something out of the kindness of his heart.
Mm.
But you don't go and talk about it on social media. I mean, if I've paid for some old lady's groceries in the shops, I'm not going to tell you I did. Otherwise, I'm looking for attention.
You just told us.
Shit. Shit. Shit.
See? All right.
The point, I was saying when I...
Before you revealed
before
that
I didn't,
what you
no,
did.
I didn't reveal anything. I hate people who are horrible to waiters, though. I've told you before, I've been sitting at restaurants and I've heard people being abusive to the waiter.
It's so uncomfortable. It
drives
me so uncomfortable.
Up the wall.
I was set up on a blind date once and the guy was trying, I don't know if he thought it was being macho, speaking badly to the waiter, but I didn't even get to dinner.
I hate that.
I got up and left.
It's awful. Good for you. Anyway, nice job, Jared. And I hope Olani is happy with the 4,500, which I'm telling you, that'll be like a month's. In fact, I think it's probably more than a month's earnings. Good for him, especially in East London.
Yes. Well. What about East London?
Well, I mean, there's no money in East London. All right. It's Bitcoin at $5,515 this morning and Ethereum at $174 if you're watching those. And we'll be back with some news and some of the other stuff you need to know. It's Tuesday morning, cliffcentral.com. We'll hit you with some stories next.
This is cliffcentral.com.